This podcast is sponsored by Hercules Strong Guard Tires. Visit HerculesTiresCommercial.com to learn more.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across this entire country of ours, the USA, and around the planet, Earth, that is. I'm Gary McNamara. Eric has the morning off. It's you and me. Voice is doing pretty good. I'm hanging in there. I don't feel like I have to strain it. In fact, last hour I did raise my voice a couple of times. But it's all good. We have Pure Insanity coming up later on this hour. This is Pure Insanity. But I did promise you what the Democrats are proposing now, that Kyrsten Sinema has shot down the plans to raise corporate and individual income tax rates. And now Democrats, and you saw it over the weekend, Janet Yellen was talking about a Treasury Secretary, their new wealth tax, but it's not a wealth tax. They're calling it a unrealized capital gains tax. Said Janet Yellen, Treasury Secretary, it's not a wealth tax, but a tax on unrealized capital gains of exceptionally wealthy individuals. Let me read it here from the Wall Street Journal. It's not a wealth tax, but a tax on unrealized capital gains of exceptionally wealthy individuals, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen was at pains to explain. The Treasury gig hasn't been good for her reputation. But she certainly knows that a tax on unrealized capital gains is a de facto wealth tax, which would be levied on property rather than income. For example, if Jeff Bezos's Beverly Hills estate appreciates by 10% in a year, he could be taxed on its increased in value. Ditto for his Amazon stock holdings. Currently, such assets are only taxed when they're sold, which is when the income or the profit is realized. Democrats claim that the tax will only hit some 700 uber-rich Americans with more than $1 billion in assets or who have more than $1 million in income for three consecutive years. That's what they always say. The first income tax enacted after ratification of the 16th Amendment in 1913 had seven tax brackets with rates that began from 1% on income over $83,972 of our dollars today in current dollars to 7% on income exceeding over $14 million in today's dollars. And you know what the rates are now. The alternative minimum tax was only applied initially to the richest Americans, but with time expanded to hit millions in the middle class. But the biggest problem here, and Eric and I talked about this, with any type of wealth tax, it's going to be a logistical nightmare. Maybe the only impediment extending the wealth tax more broadly is the challenge of administering it. Even House and Ways Means Chairman Richard Neal acknowledges it would be a logistical nightmare. Details of Mr. Wyden's plan have not been released, so it's not clear if the tax would apply to non-financial assets like artwork, jewelry, and intellectual property. If so, more Americans could get soaked, since the IRS will no doubt inflate the value of non-financial assets, as it often does with the estates of high earners. A tax court this year ruled that the late entertainer Michael Jackson's likeness and image were worth about $150 million less than the IRS claimed. Will the Wyden plan tax Americans' likeness and image? How about copyrights and patents? The IRS will have to hire many more auditors to assess the value of property, which will mean more tax litigation. The Washington Post reports that a summary of the draft plan would allow taxpayers to deduct losses on the value of assets. Does that include deducting the full value of paper losses from stock market corrections? Don't count on it. Under current law, taxpayers can only deduct $3,000 in net losses from the sale of financial assets in a year. Complexity, because it's been tried. Complexity is one of the reasons European countries, including France, Germany, and Sweden, abandon broad-based wealth taxes. Many of the rich dodged wealth taxes by exploiting carve-outs or moving. The very rich will find ways to avoid taxes, but bad tax policy distorts investment. Sweden, remember? Sweden, where people are happy. Sweden abolished its wealth tax in 2007, following an exodus of capital and business tycoons. France repealed its net wealth tax in 2018, estimating that some 10,000 people worth 35 billion euros worth of assets had left in the previous 15 years, all for tax reasons. The government was losing revenue from income taxes that the wealthy would have paid. Mrs. Pelosi says the Democrats' wealth tax will raise $200 to $250 billion over a decade, but that won't cover even their green energy, electric vehicle, or other climate tax credits. By the way, and Eric and I have said this in the past and said it as recently as an hour ago, from the Wall Street Journal, a wealth tax is probably illegal. The Constitution says Congress can only impose direct taxes that are apportioned among the several states, according to population, while the 16th Amendment authorized Congress to tax incomes from whatever source derived without apportionment. Unrealized capital gains are not income. Democrats figure that's a fight for another day. Their sole goal now is to come up with some way, any way, to raise enough revenue on paper, however illusionary it is, to fund their spending bill without losing the votes of Sinema and Manchin. So what it is let's make up a tax that won't even pass, and then on paper we can say that we're paying for it, and then we're responsible. Again, let's lie. Let's do something that probably won't happen, that isn't a guaranteed source of income, to claim that we paid for something that we actually won't pay for, and we use the most optimistic view, even if the tax would be constitutional. We assume that there are no consequences, that people won't move. So in essence, they know that they're lying to you, but Wall Street Journal makes a good point. It's got nothing to do with actually taxing. It has to do with coming up with a plan that sounds like you're going after the right people, the evil billionaires, to pay for this completely, when in essence you're not. And it will be put on future taxpayers. We'll be putting the tax burden again on our children and our grandchildren. Democrats figure that's a fight for another day. Their sole goal now is to come up with some way, any way, to raise enough revenue on paper, even though it's an illusion, to fund their spending bills. The Associated Press reports that Mr. Manchin is fine with the wealth tax. Democrats will take any refuge in a political storm, even if it's a mirage. And right there, Joe Manchin shows he is no conservative. So the next time Joe Manchin says, I'm a conservative, the fact that he is for a wealth tax shows he is not. And as we've stated, even Joe Manchin, even though Republicans have looked at him and said, thank goodness he is there, Joe Manchin is no conservative, and Joe Manchin will do something that he knows also is sell a big lie to the American people, because he knows the wealth tax isn't going to pay for it. He's not an idiot. So there you go. Let's go to Eric in Abilene real quickly here, because I think I answered the question he has, but we'll go through it again anyway here on the unrealized capital gains. Hi, Eric, are you there?
Yeah, hi, Gary.
Hi.
Hey, I went over my stock, and I do a little crypto, And I have a little bit over, what, $2,000 in unrealized capital gains. And I'm thinking, the more I listen to these Democrats, think they know about the economy, the more I realize Trump had it right. These guys are stupid, because I'm thinking the market goes up and it goes down, and it goes down after I pay the tax. And, well, am I going to get my money back? Because I never really cashed it in to realize the gain.
No.
You know, that seems to be unfair to me. It's like the Minority Report of finance.
That's a great analogy. The Minority Report of taxing. Wow. Well, under current law, taxpayers can only deduct $3,000 in net losses from the sale of financial assets in a year. So currently, even you can view that as being unfair, because you can be taxed fully on what you gain, but not fully on what you lose in the current tax system. But this even goes further. Wow, I love it. This is the Minority Report unrealized capital gains tax, where you're being taxed on something that you might get in the future.
and that's probably how they're justifying all these taxes, is they're coming up with all these fake, phony numbers because, well, there's going to be value in the future.
Wow.
Well, but it's a phantom. It's a ghost. And that's how they're justifying all these extra spending bills. Well, it's going to be paid for. Well, how do you know it? Well, that's why the goalposts keep moving. It's phantom.
Well, let me ask you this. How does this work out? Because if you pay it, because you pay the capital gains tax once. Right. I mean,
that's when I cash it in.
Right. Right. When you cash in, you pay it once. But let's say my financial asset is worth $10,000 more than it was when I first took it out last year. So I'd have to, and so I was going to cash it out. I'd pay the $10,000, the capital gains tax.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it goes from what the,
if it goes the other way.
Right. What happens in year two? What happens under this plan, where if it goes up $10,000, well, then I'm taxed on that $10,000, even if I haven't taken it out. And then if I take it out the next year, am I double taxed on that if it's the same amount?
Well, absolutely. And what I'm more concerned about is similar to what you're concerned about, is, let's say I'm, you know, the unrealized gain that I have now, which is what, $2,100, and I'm taxed on that, and then next year the market goes down, my gain, my unrealized gain is gone because of the tax, my value is less, and then am I going to be taxed again if the market happens to go up or continues to go down? And then I've got a loss, because if the market goes down, I've already paid a tax on the unrealized gain. See how complex it becomes? Because these Democrats are stupid. Because it's all fake, phony numbers. The market goes up, it goes down. But when it goes down, you're really down, because you've just paid a tax on something you never got.
Right. You never got it. Yeah, it's a great point.
It's bad news. So you're doing a great job, and I appreciate your show. I listen to you guys pretty much about every day.
Thanks, Eric. I appreciate it. Well, you came up with the Minority Report of taxes. That is genius. Eric is going to like that. I'm going to tell him that tomorrow and see his reaction. He'll say, that's really great. I'll tell him, I came up with that. No, I'll tell him Eric and Abilene did. So that is great. Yeah. Well, you know what justifies it? What justifies it is, but it's against billionaires and they're evil. So that's a justification. But once they start a wealth tax, are you telling me that 20 years from now, it's not going to go lower like the alternative minimum tax did, like the income tax? Are we in a time now where Democrats truly are about fiscal responsibilities? We're only going to tax these people, and we won't go after more revenue down the road. Oh, 866-90-RED-EYE.
As the seasons change, so does truck maintenance. Cold weather can affect batteries, air brake systems, tire inflation pressures, and even diesel fuel itself. Here's a maintenance tip to help make sure your rig is ready when winter comes knocking. When temperatures fall, the paraffin wax in diesel fuel can thicken so much it clogs fuel filters or solidifies to the point where it will no longer flow. Invest in a new fuel filter now and consider adding a winter fuel additive to your maintenance routine to help prevent fuel gelling. Stop into a TA truck service near you to shop a wide selection of winter fuel additives and fuel filters today.
This maintenance tip is brought to you by TA Truck Service. More bays, more expertise, more solutions.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. So, yeah, that's, you know, when it comes down, again, to the unrealized capital gains tax or the wealth tax, whatever, it probably is unconstitutional. As to the, if they call it unrealized capital gains, because a capital gains tax is... And if the legislature passes it, I mean, that would be viewed as a wealth tax, I think, because you have not received anything from it. You haven't cashed out anything. You haven't made a profit on it. So, yeah, I still think that would run into constitutional problems, too. But I think the Wall Street Journal called it. They don't care. They don't care whether it's unconstitutional or not. They just want to be able to sit there and say, hey, we came up with this tax. It goes after billionaires, and we believe we'll get this amount of money from it, which they won't. And so it justifies the spending of this money because the billionaires will pay for it. And if they don't, they don't care because all they care about is the spending. They care about the spending. They care about the imagery. Well, we wanted to go after the billionaires. Well, the courts, we need to get rid of the Supreme Court because the Supreme Court said, we can't put this tax in because it's unconstitutional. We need to change the Constitution. And meanwhile, when we change the Constitution on taxes, let's change it on the Senate. Let's change it on the three branches of government. Let's change it on the Electoral College. Let's change it on the First Amendment. Let's get rid of freedom of speech. These are all the things that they're against, so why not? It's just amazing. But I do like what Eric and Abilene came up with. The minority report tax. Profits you could make or might make in the future. Will three tax auditors floating in that liquid. You go to the IRS. That's what do they call the three women in I can't remember. The ones that would figure out where the crime was going to happen, where the future crime would be committed. In case you know, Minority Report, it's where they actually had these they were able to look into the future and what crime you were going to commit maybe a day from now or a week from now, and they'd arrest you before you actually did the crime. That's why the guy calls it a minority report tax. I can't wait till they come out and try to sell it here in the next week. But Manchin's showing his stripes now, you know, because he knows any type of wealth tax isn't going to pay for this. And so he claimed to care about that, and he doesn't. If you want to get in, 866-90-RED-EYE, I have the most insane thing that I've read in a long time. Okay. In a day. From somebody on the left. And it's just, I just happened to see it in the last half hour, and I've got to throw it your way coming up next.
866-90-RED-EYE. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley. He has the morning off. I'm Gary McNamara. All right, I just happened to see this from NBCNews.com. From their Think Opinion Analysis and Essays. You ready for this? I had no intention. I didn't see this until about a half hour ago, and I'm like, oh my God. And I read it. I'm like, oh, these people are just nuts. This is from a guy who is, his name is Eric Sagan, parenting health and culture journalist at NBCNews.com. You ready for this? Car accidents cause death, injury, and trauma. Why do we shrug them off? Americans are in a total collective denial about how lethal our car dependency is. We have to stop normalizing the suffering caused by cars. Americans don't always fear the things we should. This summer, my dad visited us every week in the Pacific Northwest to play with our grandkids, and every week I could predict what his complaints would be. The record-breaking heat in the area was aggravating him, as was the chronic pain in his back, a deep ache still lingering from a major car accident 2 years ago. The common cause of these events was not lost on me. The threat car emissions pose to the environment gets some attention, but what we Americans are still in total denial, collective denial about, is how lethal our car dependency already is. Every year, nearly 40,000 people die in crashes, and at least another 3.3 million are injured. Cars put us in clear, imminent danger every day, especially the most vulnerable and marginalized. Motor vehicle traffic is a leading cause of death for children, well ahead of firearms or drownings. Among adults, black and brown people are more likely to die or be injured by cars than white people are. So it's racist, too. This year, 21,000 people have died in motor vehicle car accidents, up 17% from 2019, according to preliminary estimates by the National Safety Council released last month. Millions have been injured seriously enough. Usually when millions of Americans are being killed or injured at these rates, it triggers public outcry, even widespread movements. But when it comes to car accidents, we've mostly shrugged our shoulders and accepted the carnage as an unavoidable fact of life. Self-driving and electric cars are often hailed as solutions to the safety issue posed by cars. But before we try to fix a problem, we have to first name the problem. In this case, we have to stop normalizing trauma caused by cars. By the way, people will die in electric vehicles. They already have. We are a very car-dependent society, and it makes us nonchalant about crashes, says J. Gail Beck, a licensed clinical psychologist who focuses on the emotional aftermath of trauma and has studied post-traumatic stress disorder among survivors of motor vehicle accidents. According to a 1995 study that is still cited by mental health professionals and auto injury lawyers alike, 39.2% of survivors of car accidents develop PTSD. And it's not just those whose cars are crashed into. When it comes to who experiences symptoms of trauma, he notes, we usually think about the person being hit, not the person doing the hitting or the first responders and helpers on the scene. The impact is bigger yet if you think of the victim's families, friends, colleagues, and neighbors. One reason might be a culture of toxic individualism. Listen to this here. This is the key. One reason might be a culture of toxic individualism that reduces almost any systemic problem from sexual harassment to health care to so-called isolated incidents. In the context of cars, we tend not to blame public infrastructure but individual drivers, said Steve Davis, an assistant vice president to transportation strategy at Smart Growth America, an advocacy group for safe communities. But drivers can only control so much, the least of which are environments built decades ago and maintained at status quo. The design of roadways is for cars and speed. That's the philosophy of street design. Putting the onus on U.S. drivers, three-quarters of whom anyway consider themselves to be safer than average, to lower fatalities and accidents simply by driving better seems like an exercise in futility. It's usually not reckless driving that causes accidents, but everyday driving that we do all well. By the way, nowhere did he make the case here that it's the infrastructure of roads. He said it, but there's no evidence to support that. It's not reckless driving that causes most accidents, but everyday driving that we all do. It's true that with the exception of the past few years, cars generally have become safer for drivers and passengers since the 1970s. But the rate of violence, it's not violence, is still exceptionally high compared to other developed countries. And they go through the statistics there. And then they talk about people walking who get hit by cars. In fact, part of the reason more black Americans drive or die in traffic deaths than any other race is because they are more likely to have to walk to get places, which is riskier than driving, and live in neighborhoods that are more likely to lack safety features like crosswalks, even as high speed freeways with dangerous crossing conditions offer terror through them. Children, meanwhile, are inherently more vulnerable because of their smaller size. I'm trying to see what evidence he uses to back this up. And I don't see any. Yeah, I don't see any of the, I don't see any statistics or evidence to back up what he is saying. But do we need to take car accidents more seriously as a culture? Whatever. Most Americans alive today have known a family member or friend or at least been involved in a fender bender, a minor collision. The same month my dad was flipped over in his SUV and cut out of a seatbelt. A coworker was commuting home when a driver T-boned her bus in the middle of a major intersection. She sustained back and shoulder injuries. Unlike my dad, nearly 2 years later, like my dad, she still has flare-ups that limit her mobility. I would dare to say that if you look at the majority of accidents out there, you would see, just like a significant portion of airline accidents, it's operator error. This is where I would disagree with it. The majority of accidents are operator error. The operator makes a mistake. Some are mechanical, but the majority are operator error. And do people drive recklessly? Yeah, I see it every day when I come to work. And I've said this many times, that people out there driving have no idea about physics. No idea. Because if they understood physics, they wouldn't drive as recklessly as they do. Do I know the danger every time I get into my vehicle? Yep. Absolutely. I understand physics. Do other people? I can't speak for them. How do you make people more concerned about something that they do every day? You can't. So what is the solution, I'm sure? What would the solution be? Don't drive your car. It goes, envisioning an alternative to this mess might be impossible for many of us, but we have to. However complicated the issue is, the logic is simple. We need to open our eyes and see that we're at the end of the road. What's your point? One of the reasons, you know, we had a discussion. It's one of the reasons that I have a car is the same reason I talked about before. I like the freedom. I like the ability to go and do whatever I want. Well, you should give that up because there's a chance of people dying if you do that. I recognize that. So does everybody else driving. And the reason they drive is because they want the freedom to do the things that they wish to do when they wish to do them. And so we're being told, I mean, and this the logic is, we have to force you out of your cars. Was it Ray LaHood who said that? Former transportation secretary under Obama. We need to coerce people out of their vehicles. And force them to take public transportation. Now, we've seen it doesn't work. A small minority of people, and in some areas where you have extreme dense populations where parking is $1 million a day. Okay, I'm exaggerating maybe a little bit. You're going to have more people take public transportation for the most part. It's too inconvenient. But it only takes 15 minutes, and then you get to your place, and then it may take 15 minutes, a half hour. And it's right, and people don't want to do it. And they want the ability to do exactly what they want to do when they wish to do it. Well, that's wrong. You need to rethink for the betterment of society. It's your toxic individualism that is causing you to be selfish. You need to be in a much more organized society. I'll never forget my friend who took liberal urban planning and said, having a house is wrong. Having a car is wrong. We need to be riding our bikes more. We need to force people in to smaller apartments where they can be near each other. And see, the benefits are they get to talk to their neighbors every day. They get to coexist with other people. We should have common green areas where people can all gather together in their living space. People should be riding bicycles. We should have bicycles that go to the public transportation to take people somewhere. And since most people don't understand what's good for them, this was actually told to me, then we need to force people to do what is best for them because they don't know what's best for them. So I think I'm just going to sit home all day for the rest of my life and wait for Amazon to deliver stuff to my door. I'm not going to leave my house. So, you know, it's... And when we talk about roads and we talk about infrastructure, we talk about things like that, you drive for the conditions. So you can blame whatever you want. It's the infrastructure fault. Shut up. Yes, I have been, not in a long time. I was in two accidents. Once we got sideswiped, I came out okay. Nobody was hospitalized in either. And well, in the other one was I crossed and didn't see a motorcyclist, and he hit the back of my car and flew over the top, broke his ankle. I was 18 when that happened, but not in a long, long time. Why? Because I drive very defensively. Why? Because I remember in my head today still the crunching of the metal. Now, I won't talk about when I was in one of the legend cars at Texas Motor Speedway and flipped over five times, trying to cut a corner and clip tires with the other racer, and went, frrr. That was really interesting. I do remember as I was flipping over in the race car, you know the thought that went through my head? Please don't have a piece of, this was actually the thought that went through my head. Please don't have a piece of metal come through here and decapitate me because my mother will not be able to handle that. That's actually the thought that I had when I was in the race car flipping over. That's the thought that went through my head. Oh, God, Mom will just kill me for it. Oh, wait a minute, you'll already be dead. That thought went through my head, too. And then what happened? I came back on four tires. Everything was fine. The guy I was racing the heat with looked at me and put his thumbs up. I put my thumbs up, and he waved, let's go, because he spun around. And so we took off again. I had a flat, though, so I couldn't really go anywhere. But there you go. I just had to read that one. It's like, oh, just... Ugh. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. By the way, how would you stop the deaths in automobiles? If you looked at part of the solution, since this guy is saying that we need to reevaluate, either you would take cars off the road and everything would be public transportation and bicycles and things like that. But people couldn't drive. You couldn't drive the way that you do. And we would have to get rid of that toxic individualism, and we would all have to get on public transportation. I mean, I don't know. Or you would have to have much more increased police presence on the road, which the left doesn't want to do. In fact, they're moving away from that. The left doesn't want police officers with strict enforcement of all the rules of the road. They've made that clear. So since they won't do that, the only choice would be to take automobiles off the roads. Yeah, that's going to happen.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the entire planet, Earth, we are Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara. Eric has the morning off, 866-90-RED-EYE, if you would like to get in. I'm trying to talk a little quieter because I've had some vocal cord problems. I did get a little bit excited last hour, but then there were some insane things to get a little bit excited about. But so far, the voice is doing really good. I had trouble yesterday morning after I got home from the show, and I went, uh-oh, knowing that Eric wasn't going to be here. And so I've just tried to take it easy. Yes, I'm screaming inside, but I'm trying to have an ounce of decorum for medicinal purposes on the air. All right, 866-90-RED-EYE, if you'd like to get in. In the news, and this started last week, you saw a number of companies that are considered federal contractors start contacting the White House, the Office of Management and Budget, and saying, wait a minute, you know, this, you don't want to do this. You don't want to do the COVID vaccine mandate until after the holidays are over. You don't want to do it. And we brought you a variety of reports here over the last couple of days of what was going on last week. Now, yesterday, you actually officially had business groups ask the White House to delay the Biden COVID vaccine mandate until after the holidays. This from CNBC, where they went to the White House last week. They actually met last Monday, and then you had OMB officials who had several meetings lined up yesterday and today with groups representing dentists, trucking companies, staffing companies, and realtors, among others. The American Trucking Association, which will meet today with the OMB, warned the administration last week that many drivers will likely quit rather than get vaccinated, further disrupting the national supply chain at a time when the industry is already short 80,000 drivers. The Trucking Association estimates companies covered by the mandates could lose 37% of drivers through retirements, resignations, and workers switching to smaller companies not required by the mandate. Retailers are also particularly concerned the mandate could trigger a spike in resignations that would make worse the staffing problems at businesses already short on people, said a lobbyist for the Retail Industry Leaders Association. It has been a hectic holiday season already, as you know, with supply chain struggles, Armstrong told CNBC after meeting with White House officials last Monday. This is a difficult policy to implement. It would be even more difficult during the holiday season. 30% of unvaccinated workers said they would leave their jobs rather than comply with the vaccine or testing mandate, recent polling has showed. Goldman Sachs, in an analysis published in September, said the mandate could hurt the already tight labor market. However, it said survey responses are often exaggerated and not as many people would actually quit. As we stated earlier, you look at some industries out there that are short-staffed already, you reduce it another 5 to 10%. It could be monumental in its devastating impact. The National Retailers Federation, the Trucking Association, and the Retail Leaders Group are asking White House officials to give businesses 90 days to comply with the mandate, delaying implementation until late January at the earliest. You know, if that happens, at that point, you had former FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb over the weekend say, in every state, this is going to be downhill after Thanksgiving. We reference him a lot because we followed him a lot, and he's been one of the most accurate of the medical officials out there in calling what the Delta variant was going to do. Also, last week when we were on vacation, it came out that they were concerned about the other Delta variant in the UK, but as he pointed out, where it has appeared in California, it's less contagious than this variant, so it's not going to than the original Delta variant. I think it's called Delta Plus. So I don't expect anything from it. We have now, I was going through some of the figures yesterday from the CDC. You now have 96.3%. Well, that was yesterday, 96.3% of people over the age of 65 that have at least a first vaccine. You know, between 64 and 75 years of age, I broke down the demographics, 99%. As I said before, it's always been this. It hasn't been about politics. It's been about people viewing their risk. We talked about this from day one. National Review looked at it, said the same thing. The study showed the same thing. The Democrats tried to make this something that was, oh, it's Trump supporters. No. Still, on the data that is available on race demographics, it's still blacks as a proportion of their population which are most reluctant to get the vaccine. And that's from the CDC numbers as of yesterday. So, as Eric said, people made the decision. Either they're going to get it or they're not going to get it. And you can do whatever you want. You may get a few more, but if you implement this, if you delay it, which I suggest that they do, otherwise it could be a nightmare Christmas. By the way, when I said I suggest they do, that's political advice to them. Because if you looked at the numbers and you go state by state, Bloomberg has them, CDC numbers have them. It's crashing in the South, absolutely crashing. Florida, Texas, Louisiana. This was a variant that moved through quick and then died quick. And now, because it moved through so quickly, how many people have recent exposure who weren't vaccinated and got COVID? And so now they also have protection. So they do this at their own peril. And, you know, the stubbornness of Izzy Mandelbaum, we refer to Biden as Izzy Mandelbaum, the character from Seinfeld. You know, he's just so stubborn. I don't care, we're going to do it. They keep doing things every single day. I'm just amazed. Every single day they do things. I'm like, wow, the public is against this. The public is against this. And they go along and they just lie as if, no, the public's for it. Everything's great. Last week was amazing when we were on vacation. I'm telling you, I was like, wow. To sit back and not be in the bubble of where I am every day and just see that everything that's bad, they were spinning that everything that bad that's happening right now in our society is because things are so great. Like, my God, you got to be kidding me. So if they're going to do that every single day, they don't care. There is no shame. Their philosophy is lie and lie as big as you can. Make stuff up. It doesn't matter. It doesn't even matter whether it seems that it doesn't even matter whether it's positive for them or not. It's almost as if the aides are like, look, whatever Biden wants, just don't upset him, because then we can't control him at all. Just say yes, 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 and defend all the insanity that comes out of his mouth. So, yeah, so we'll see what happens with the Trucking Association going to talk to the White House today. And it all started last week. There it was, Politico had it. And these are all, you know, CNBC, Politico, these aren't conservative magazines that are covering all of this. You know, these aren't conservative magazines. These are liberal. Biden's vaccine mandate has cargo giants in a pre-holiday panic. The Trade Association for UPS, FedEx, and others have written the Office of Business and Management warning about further supply chain disruptions. I said budget before. This is the OBM. I was thinking OMB. Please excuse me. So yeah, it's already going to be a nightmare. Oh, I went in the store the other day. This store that always has by Halloween. Now, this will be serious. They always have eggnog. Not that I really can drink it, but they always have eggnog. I noticed the eggnog isn't in yet. I just happened to notice that yesterday. I went, where's the eggnog? It's always in. Because I love this stuff. I could drink a quart of it, but I really can't. It's not good for me. All right, 866-90-RED-EYE. If you want to get in, we'll quickly touch again on the Senate proposal for the unrealized capital gains tax. The story out there that Manchin has completely shut down Bernie Sanders and any type of Medicare expansion out there. And Dave Chappelle tells his opposition, hey, I'll meet on my terms. And if you want to meet with me, you got to watch the entire special from beginning to end, but you will not summon me. I'm not bending to anybody's demand. So that coming up and more. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Several caught up in the Halloween myths about bats,
I am a vampire,
may not realize just how beneficial bat species are around the world. U.S. Forest Service researcher Susan Loeb says start with a bat's diet of insects.
Many of those insects are pests for row crops, orchards, and in forests. They can also feed on some insects that are vectors for disease to both livestock and to humans.
While other species feed on nectar.
In doing so, they pollinate a number of species, some of which are important agricultural crops.
Some species of bats in the subtropics and tropics, meanwhile, consume fruit.
After they eat the fruit, they disperse the seeds, both at the base of the tree while they are eating it, or also in their guano, and then are important for forest regeneration.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The USDA report is brought to you by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara. Eric has the morning off. The other thing we talked about today a lot, because this seemed to come up the last part of our vacation, is the Democrats' new angle of a wealth tax, which is called an unrealized capital gains tax. And as Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, I'll just read from the Wall Street Journal. It's not a wealth tax, but a tax on unrealized capital gains at exceptionally wealthy individuals. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen was at pains to explain. The Treasury gig hasn't been good for her reputation, but she certainly knows that a tax on unrealized capital gains is a de facto wealth tax, which would be levied on property rather than income. And they say, for example, if Jeff Bezos' Beverly Hills estate appreciates by 10% in a year, he could be taxed on its increase in value. Ditto for his Amazon stock holdings. Currently, such assets are only taxed when they're sold, which is when the income is actually realized. That's why one of our callers, Eric in Abilene, came up with a great idea. He called it a minority report tax. Before you actually make a profit, you're taxed on what it would be. Well, what if you lose? Can you deduct the loss of losses that you haven't realized because you haven't cashed out? And as they write here, details of Senator Wyden's plan has not been released yet, so it's not clear if the tax would apply to non-financial assets like artwork, jewelry, and intellectual property. If so, more Americans could get soaked, since the IRS will no doubt inflate the value of non-financial assets, as it often does with the estates of high earners. And they give this as an example. A United States tax court this year ruled that Michael Jackson's likeness and image were worth about $157 million less than the IRS claimed. Will the Wyden plan tax Americans' likeness and image? What about copyrights? What about patents? Trying to figure out what they're worth this year based on what kind of formula. The IRS will have to hire many more auditors to assess the value of the property, which will mean more tax litigation. As for taking losses, they say the IRS only allows you to deduct $3,000 in net losses from the sale of financial assets in a year. But that's because they only tax you when you reap the profits of it by cashing out when it's up. And they talk about all the European countries, France, Germany, Sweden, got rid of their broad-based wealth taxes. Why? It got to be too complicated. Got to be insanity. And as Sweden found out, they estimated some 10,000 people worth 35 billion euros worth of assets had left the country in the previous 15 years for tax reasons. The rich will leave. They'll just go. They'll invest elsewhere. But as the Wall Street Journal pointed out, and we said this too, it's probably unconstitutional to begin with. Because you really can't make it a capital gains tax because you haven't made anything on it. They're taxing you on what you haven't realized, and they believe that that probably would be unconstitutional. The other thing is they say probably the Democrats don't care. They just wanted to come up with some kind of scheme to pretend that they're paying for it. So if it doesn't, if the courts blow it out, which they probably will, they don't care. They're just they can make the claim, well, we tried to tax the rich, but the courts got in the way, which is why we need to have liberal justices in there so they can make up law as we wish them to make up law, I guess. So the fact that Manchin said he is for the wealth tax, if he's for this, I don't know if he's for a wealth tax, it blows out of the water, as we have said all along. When he said a couple of weeks ago, I am a conservative. No, you're not. Stop it. You're not a conservative. We caught him lying before. He's lying again. If you want to get in, 866-90-RED, I will get to more of your calls and comments and also tell you about Dave Chappelle says sorry to his opposition. You will not summon me. I'm not bending to anybody's demand. If you want to meet, you'll meet on my terms, not yours, which means they're not going to meet. That more on the way, 866-90-RED-EYE. It's time for your forecast.
Two big storm systems are dominating the weather much of this early week. The system that brought an atmospheric river of moisture to the Pacific Northwest is moving into the Rockies today. It'll bring with it the chance for some heavy rain and snow in the higher elevations. Not much of a dryout for the Northwest, though, as the weather there will remain rainy for the next few days. Meanwhile, there's a good old-fashioned nor'easter blooming out in the Atlantic. That storm is expected to develop across the northeast today. Heavy rains could bring flash flooding to parts of New England, with some strong wind gusts of up to 50 miles per hour expected. Higher gusts are possible along the coastline. The low-pressure system should develop across the central plains today. That could bring some severe thunderstorms this evening from Kansas back into central Texas. Damaging wind gusts, large hail, and isolated tornadoes are possible. And in the southeast, sunshine will dominate across Florida today. Temperatures there expected near 90. And that's a look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm Bill Rakoff.
Pandemic Heroes, Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
I have no idea what that means, as I stated from the very beginning, but hello. I'm Gary McNamara. Eric has the morning off, 866-90 Red Eye. If you would like to get in on the show. Well, while we were on vacation last week, I did see some social media posts saying, Dave Chappelle will probably crumble to the liberal assault. My favorite, though, was, my God, this has been 3 weeks of this incredible, tense controversy that's going on because Dave Chappelle dared to say, only women have babies. Puts it in perspective. He was back out on Instagram yesterday saying that he will meet on his terms. He said, it's been said in the press, this is a quote, that I was invited to speak to the transgender employees at Netflix and I refused. That is not true. If they would have invited me, I would have accepted it. Chappelle said in a video he posted to Instagram, although I am confused about what we are speaking about, I said what I said, and boy, I heard what you said. My God, how could I not? You said you want a safe working environment at Netflix. Well, it seems I am the only one that cannot go into the office. Of course, implying it is not a safe working environment for Dave Chappelle. And so he said he'll meet on his terms. If you want to meet, you've got to watch the special from beginning to end. So there will be a closer mandate from Dave Chappelle. If you don't fulfill the closer mandate, you can't meet with them. He said he's not bending to anybody's demand. It will be done under his conditions. And as I mentioned earlier, that I did see over the weekend that you had a number of people that were coming out, even conservatives saying, well, he's not that funny anymore anyway. I don't think funny even matters here. I mean, I've seen Chappelle before. I remember watching some of his special. I don't really watch a lot of comedy routines. Haven't in a while. Or stand-up comedians. I don't. I've seen part of the Netflix special, and I agree, part of it, you know, it's more of him voicing his opinions. And I guess to get off on another tangent, because of all this, he may be viewed more as somebody who was involved in the arena of ideas and not just a stand-up comedian. Yeah, I mean, he risks that, but I think his popularity for whatever reason, whether it's his comedic ability or his strong stand on the culture war of the liberal transgender activist movement and of free speech. Either way, I mean, he's become extremely popular. In the video that I was watching, he was saying it in front of a group of people, and they were, I don't know if it was a stand-up comedy appearance, but he was extremely well-received from that audience. I look at it simply and say, you know, there's stuff that I saw and went, eh, okay, it's not that great or whatever. It's, you know, but that's not the point. The point is the message and what he's being demonized for, the specific message, the same thing as the congressman was, who was thrown off Twitter for saying that Dr. Rachel Levine is not a female and was accused of hate mongering, misgendering, which is now hate. If you tell the truth, is now hate. And so I'm glad that Chappelle is fighting this, because he's a huge figure in popular culture today. And I think it's important for just stand-up comedy in general that they take a strong stand. And I go back and I think of the comedians that I loved, and it wasn't necessarily because I agreed with all of their messaging. Carlin, for example. You know, Carlin hated political correctness. It'd be interesting to see what he'd be saying today. Oh. But then he would get it wrong on the conservative movement, in my opinion, many times in his messaging. But that's okay. It's okay. He always made me think. I always wanted to watch him when he had a special. Even when, in some of his final specials, he seemed to get bitter instead of being the inquisitive guy that I thought was great for stand-up comedy. But still, he always had a message that I was willing to accept and then analyze. And so I'm fine with it. But the last thing I'd ever want to do, would I ever want to shut up George Carlin? No. Would I ever want to shut Kathy Griffin? No, I wouldn't want to shut her up. Remember what did the whole thing with the Trump head and all that? I don't want to shut anybody up. I don't know where this comes from on the left, except for one point, and one point always that we always go back to. They can't argue with these people, so they need to shut them up. And they get frustrated and they get angry. You know, they're furious. It's not that they want to be inquisitive and say, wait a minute, you said this, but you're wrong here, 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 and I can prove that you're wrong. There doesn't seem to be like that the confidence that I'm going to argue with this person and I'm going to blow them away. They're all operating from fear. This person is powerful, has influence, and I can't argue with them. I can't debate them. They're too good for me. So what do? I accuse them of being hate mongers. I accuse them of racism. And I try to shut them down. It's really a foreign concept. Maybe it's the time that I grew up. In the 60s and the 70s. Lenny Bruce was a little bit before my time. And even though I've seen, his stand-up routine, and I didn't at times find him particularly humorous at all. Loved Cosby in his heyday. Cosby on racial issues was able to be so subtle and bring up, huge racial problems and have you laughing at the same time, but the message was still there big time. The intellectual political stimulation of Steve Martin. Oh, okay, I guess I can't go there. I can't sell that to you. there really wasn't much of a message to Steve Martin, was there? So, no, and so I've always enjoyed stand-up comedy, and I realize there's different genres of stand-up, just like there are talk radio. And so either you like it or you don't like it, and it either succeeds or does not succeed in the marketplace. But it's all in the arena of ideas, and I don't want to shut anybody up. Why do they? Because they can't argue with them. Because their whole basis comes from emotion and not critical thinking. And when you judge issues by emotion, you can't argue them. You just want to shut the other person up. Red Eye. If you would like to get in, let us go to Peter in Phoenix about Biden COVID mandates and businesses trying to get them to delay it to January. Hi, Peter. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I was just I was looking at the government mandate that Biden has put through. It looks like it's not going to happen right away, and it could be delayed until January, they're saying now. Meanwhile, all the governments, local governments, and private companies like airlines are firing people, while nobody at the government level is fired. And my sense is that by January, they'll say, well, you know what, COVID's down far enough where we're just not going to do anything now. I don't know if you've thought about that or you think that that's a
well, the airlines viable. The airlines have made it clear. I know Southwest and American that the only reason, this is before we went on vacation, that the only reason they're instituting the mandates is because the government is forcing them to, because they're federal contractors. And I think United backed off on their voluntary one, right? I believe it was United.
Right.
I'm doing this from memory here. So and by the time we get to January anyway, if you see the projection of this and where it's projected to go, in the South, this is crashing. And unless there's a new variant that comes out that isn't controllable, the end is in sight for COVID. And the government isn't acting like it, and that's why I think you're seeing. Look at the protest you had in New York City yesterday. There were 5,000 New York City employees out there protesting. They're not Trump supporters.
No, but the point is that people are getting fired because they said do a mandate, and nobody at the federal government level is going to get, nothing's going to happen. And
well, the airlines,
they'll take something like the post office, and they'll say,
well, the company, the companies that have done the COVID mandates have done that on their own.
Well, but they did it at the prodding of the government.
Well, I don't know. Maybe some did. I don't. Tell me which specific company you're talking about.
No, even the airlines, they did it after Biden said, "I'm doing it at the federal level. Therefore, everybody else should be doing it."
Right, but have they fired anybody yet? Or are they firing them as of November 22nd?
Yeah. Well,
and if he pulls it out, but remember, all the airlines said, we will be doing it because you had to have your vaccine by a certain date, but I don't know if they started firing. I haven't heard that they fired at that date that they were planning on firing on November 22nd was a date that they said they had to, that everything had to be done in order to meet the December 8th, the December 8th mandate. So it would be either the 22nd or the 8th that they would do the firing.
People were taking vacation and saying, well, if I'm not going to get paid for my vacation that I didn't take, so they're not, Yeah, I mean, it's a whole thing. It's the same thing.
Yeah, I know. It's a mess. But if they, I agree with you, because the one point you didn't get in is you're saying if they have to go to January, they may not end up doing it at all. There's going to be problems. It's immediately going to go to the courts. Immediately it's going to go to the courts. Florida's ready right now. To file. I mean, DeSantis has been clear. I believe Texas is, and probably every Republican state will file. So it may never happen at all. You're right on that one. And by the time that they would implement it, for what? You live in a state like Texas, for all intents and purposes, we've been back to normal. I've been back to normal since March. And the government acts as if this is just beginning again, and we all have to hunker down. The federal government is. If you want to get in, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Freightliner Team Run Smart Pro Henry Albert has achieved some very impressive fuel mileage numbers. Henry shares the specs on his truck and his trailer, starting with what's under the hood.
I'm in a 2018 Cascadia Aero X. It's powered by the integrated drivetrain Detroit Series 60 DD15, 400 horsepower, 1,750 foot-pounds of torque at 975 RPM, and that's fed into the Detroit DT12 direct drive transmission with a final axle ratio of 2.16 with active lube management, riding on Michelin X1 tires, owing a fully aerodynamic trailer. The trailer is equipped with a nose cone. It's also equipped with full-length skirts from Fleet Engineers that go completely over the landing gear, completely over the trailer tandem, all the way to the rear bumper. The rain gutter has been plated over, and it's running a Stemco trailer tail. My main run, which is from Charlotte to Laredo, and I'm usually 60,000 to 65,000 pounds, I was averaging over 10 miles a gallon. It was up to 10.1.
To learn more about Henry's fuel mileage achievements, go to teamrunsmart.com. This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara. Eric off this morning, and so we made it, or should I say my vocal cords made it through the entire show, so I'm extremely happy about that. So it means we'll be here tomorrow. Have yourself a great day.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.